And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
What's making news? This was the week to remember the horrors of 9/11 of 5 years ago, and a week of increasing violence in Iraq and Afghanistan. And the president talked about World War III while students fell in Montreal. This week, we look back through time to other eras, and we look forward to what this globalizing world may be looking at when your voice of the earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
As election time nears, passions increase. Everywhere we turn, we hear reports about the upcoming races, the battles for the House and Senate. No sense complaining. It's the countdown to the fall elections. And it's no secret that a whole lot of people who pay attention to environmental issues are investing their passions in this one because a lot is hinging on the outcome. We'll be focusing on the key issues that will be affecting the future of the natural world, the debate over public lands, global warming, wilderness, offshore drilling, energy independence, protection of endangered species. These things matter. In fact, they are critical. Predictably, of course, other issues are going to steal the spotlight. I mentioned just a few in the introduction to today's show. And this time, the war in Iraq will be playing a huge factor, as it should be. Today, I'm kicking off the show with a personal critique inspired by my recent trip to New York City. I find issues directly related to the future of the wild world almost everywhere I go. I'll be discussing some observations I made while visiting some of the amazing museums in the Big Apple. In segment two, we expand our nature and politics theme as we look to the future of our interdependent world, as we talk with a full-time globalist whose business it is to make real-world decisions about the future of civilizations around the world. We'll be visiting with a spokesman with the World Bank and get his take on global warming and globalization. And then this week, Congress approved the president's powers to direct the nature and scope of domestic spying. The decision for many represents a huge change in the very definition of democracy and individual liberties. But this is not really new in America. As a matter of fact, tucked away in the middle of a beautiful California valley is a National Park Service historic monument to a time past when citizens' lives were changed in time of war and their civil liberties overridden for national security. The monument exists for a good reason, and we close today's show with a visit to the legendary Manzanar. It's all coming up, but first the news. Pop quiz. Okay, answer the following question. What is the current status on oil drilling in the Teshikpuk Lake region? Okay, write down your answer. Now pass to the person behind you. The correct answer is... nope, you can't be drilling in the Teshikpuk Lake region right now. A federal judge issued a preliminary ruling which will temporarily block the administration's plan to allow oil exploration and development in the sensitive wetlands surrounding the legendary Alaska Lake, which total about 600,000 of the more than 13 million acres available for exploration and development in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. The ruling is based on the failure of the BLM to properly assess the impact that oil development will have on this sensitive area, known for its vast wildlife resources and its reputed oil reserves, estimated to come in at about 1.4 billion barrels. Environmentalists filed a lawsuit against the Department of the Interior, the state of Alaska, and oil companies in an effort to ban drilling and development in the sensitive area. Both sides have until September 15th to respond to the judge's orders. The leases are scheduled to be sold on September 27th of this year. Following the accidental death of the enormously popular crocodile hunter Steve Irwin, whose show was watched regularly by over 200 million people, a larger-than-ordinary number of stingrays are appearing dead on the shores along Australia's beaches, many with their tails or stingers cut off. Some authorities believe the rays have been killed in some kind of unusual retaliation for the death by the rays of the popular environmental celebrity. Australian authorities have appealed to the public to please honor the ethics of Irwin, who would never have sanctioned such actions in his name. Queensland state officials announced that 10 rays had been found dead along coastal beaches and 6 more were discovered in beaches to the north. Following a 170-year absence, northern fur seals are returning to their ancestral breeding grounds along the shores of the Farallone Islands, 27 miles outside the Golden Gate. The island once boasted an enormous population of northern fur seals, noted for their thick and luxuriant fur. In 1834, however, seal hunters slaughtered 200,000 of the creatures, after which the seals never returned. However, a few began returning in the early 1970s, but this year saw a sudden increase to 188 and growing this past week. The comeback is probably due to the high protection from human intrusion the Farallones provide, said Clyde Morris, manager of the Don Edwards San Francisco Bay National Wildlife Refuge. Okay, pop quiz 2. What is the height of the tallest tree in the world? Time. Okay, if you said 370 feet, you'd be right, but perhaps for only a short time, as it appears that 3 recent discoveries in the Redwood National and State Parks will push beyond the record-setting stratosphere giant, the name given to the record holder. 3 trees, the tallest measuring a sensational 378.1 feet and named Hyperion, seem poised to exceed the record holder. The thick canopy of California's redwood forest makes it difficult for researchers to locate and then measure these giants. The final decision will be made once the extremely long tape measure finally reaches the ground to confirm the winning height. And that's the news. The debate about the future of wilderness is not just between them and us. No, advocates for wilderness seem to be heading onto 2 different paths, and some are beginning to wonder if ever the paths will meet. You'll want to be listening for a special update to the wilderness debate coming up in the next few weeks. And please, when you hear about something relevant, if you have a concern or hear about a breaking story, contact me. You can write, phone, or email. I rely on you to help keep all of us informed. Okay. It's always good to get away, and I did this past week. I made my way through airport security in San Diego, boarded a plane, and landed in New York City. I got in late, but was up at the crack of dawn, despite the jaundice of jet lag, to head on out to the Met, that is, the Metropolitan Museum of Art, one of my favorite places. I bussed there from the Upper East Side, walked up the broad steps, and suddenly, the world changes. As you leave the ever-present now, to step into something that, in its own way, is much like a wilderness. The wilderness is a place that has taken thousands and millions of years to create, and contains the most magnificent monuments to the wonder. There's nothing cheap or frivolous in a wilderness, and the same standard exists in the vast expanse of the Met. As wilderness is a tribute to the hand of God or the mystery or whatever life is, the Metropolitan is a tribute to the most magnificent creations of our own long legacy. This legacy of the art of humanity is a celebration of our common sense of wonder and the capacity to sense and to take notice and interpret and create our own understandings of our place amongst the given backdrop of the earth. And it's apparent that civilizations through all time integrated their cosmology nicely with the truth. As in the wilderness and in nature, beauty runs rampant in the halls and on the walls of the Metropolitan Museum of Art. It's so obvious that humans share a common sense of awe. We have looked upon the earth and been moved to render the leaves and blossoms, the birds and snakes, and the four-legged creatures as powerful and significant beings. We have copied the designs and motifs of nature in endless expressions of beauty. This is a true manifestation of globalization. It is a globalization of common wonder, rather than the system to regulate the global plunder. The halls of the Met are filled with the human interpretation of time and importance. I visited the Mayan exhibit, which presented the efforts of a people of Central America who began their civilization around 1800 BC, who developed writing based on animal forms, and who wove sun and rain to corn as a truth of their world, adorned by the mystical animals that inspired them, the sacred cougar above all for its power, and then the frogs and ducks and birds and snakes and lizards that festooned their wares. The ancient cultures created monumental cities at all corners of the earth and filled their halls and dwellings with manifestly wondrous beauty and thrived for hundreds and even thousands of years. As an artist, I see through the eyes of the artists who took the stone and the clay, the paint and the metal, and crafted the endless beautiful lines, the long and sinuous, the soft and splendid, the miraculous and grand. And I am taken by the common sense of beauty that is within the human species. I long to live in a world so integrated, but it was time to leave, and so I did. I walked through the grand doors and overlooked my civilization. And there was so much to be honored, locked in the brick and mortar, the lamp posts and fashion. It exists. But it gets so drowned by the horns and the snarling buses and the signs and posters and scribblings and pavements. The next day I went to the Cooper Hewitt Museum, where I was blessed to see a show celebrating three of my favorite artists. Frederick Church, who celebrated the spiritual beauty of the earth in his romantic oil paintings of the divine landscape. Thomas Moran, whose paintings, particularly of the West, and most specifically of Yellowstone, were instrumental to the establishment of Yellowstone as our first national park, and Winslow Homer. I learned there how these artists helped to identify the grand lands as a gift to the American people. And then I ended my trip with a visit to MoMA, the Museum of Modern Art, where I managed to catch the closing day of an exhibit of the Dada artists, who forged a worldwide response in protest of the emergence of the modern age of machines and factories and the diminution of humans to the indifferent development of the 20th century, all in 1917. And that evening, I heard the president declare that these times were akin to a third world war emerging, in which the forces of good and evil will meet for the final battle. And we listen each day to the shocking new news of more death in Iraq, the showdown between Iran and us, and the senseless slaughter of students in Montreal. And then I flew out of New York City on 9/12. We've progressed into the modern era, and even perhaps beyond. We may have gone a bit too far in our quest for convenience and order. As the world becomes one, is it possible that the scale exceeds its legitimacy? I guess we'll have to hold our breaths and see. You know all too well, being wise to the ways of the wild, that life is a vastly interconnected, interdependent system. When we return, we talk with someone whose job it is not only to think about this, but to manage it, as we open the doors at the World Bank. Stay tuned.